Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai. 31 years. Wow. I'm so excited. We can shut the music down, although it is such a great song. Thank God Steve Paulette made it through the traffic this morning. We came so close, because you don't want me pressing the buttons. I'm the kind of guy who hits the toaster to fix it, and it all of a sudden works again. I love the word reboot it. You know what that means in English? Shut it off and turn it on again. You can hire all the fancy IT guys you want in the world. You know what they'll do? Guaranteed. Charge you $500 an hour. They show up at your computer. First thing they do, they shut it off, and then they turn it on again. Thank you, and usually 99% of the time, that's what makes it work again. But thank God you're here, Steve Paulette. And thank God for all of you listening. I'm so excited to be here. What a day in surgery I had yesterday. A shout out to one of the patients, Ronnie. What a difficult hip that was. But he's walking, feeling good already. He's not even taking pain medication for it. I love it. I'm so excited for today's show because in studio is a very special guest. He's the best radiologist we have here in Los Angeles. He's been practicing for over 40 years. Hundreds of thousands of cases. And as Dr. Ranawat taught me, if the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know, his eyes, looking at x-rays and MRIs and CAT scans, he just sees things other people can't see. His expertise and knowledge just humbles us all. His name is Jerry Mink. Jerry, I'm going to be talking to you at 7:15, but thank you for getting up early to be with us.
Good morning. Thank you for all the compliments.
It made me think all week. What exactly does Dr. Jerry Mink do? He's a radiologist. What does a radiologist do? This is what they do. He looks at films, two-dimensional x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs. Now he looks at them on screens. But your television screen is still a two-dimensional flat surface. And yet he has to, in his mind, put together the three-dimensional structure that is your body. Your hip is not a two-dimensional XY graph. There's depth to your hip, to your shoulder, to your knee, to your ankle. And he has a skill set that allows him to do it. In addition, by the way, all the films he looks at are in black and white. Trust me, your veins are blue. Your bile in your gallbladder is green. Your fat subcutaneously is yellow. We are in color. And yet, he's got to figure out that there's swelling in the bone, that there's a contusion in Anthony Davis's gluteus maximus muscle on the MRI. He's got to see that in black and white. Two dimension to three dimension. So I thought all week, since I love the world of art, the world of sports, and the world of surgery, where do we see Jerry Mink in the art world? Where do we see the skill set of Dr. Mink in the sports world? Well, he just passed away this past week, 95 years old. The greatest golf course designer in America. 95, I can't believe it. Pete Dye and his wife, Alice, the two of them. Never went to college. Didn't get a degree in architecture. Barely got out of grade school. But Pete Dye, hands down, was the greatest golf course designer this country's ever seen. And his signature hole. We got one here at La Quinta where they're playing right now, the American Express Tournament, the 17th hole. But the first hole he made, the 17th hole, that became the most famous hole in golf here in America, is in Florida, TPC Sawgrass. Because this golf hole is a green with an island of water around it. In 1987, Lee Trevino against Jack Nicklaus got a hole-in-one on a green that he designed where it's an island. How did Pete Dye put together this perfect three-dimensional golf green? He started two-dimensionally on a napkin. This skill set of seeing 2D but being able to visualize 3D in the world of sports, to me, Pete Dye is Jerry Mink. And you're going to hear some sound bites coming up about how he visualizes things to make a three-dimensional golf course from a two-dimensional drawing on a napkin. What about in art? Where do we see two-dimensional? An architect, for example, designing a building that ultimately has to be three-dimensional. Well, what happens when they can't visualize it very well? To highlight this, 1,000 years ago in Italy, architects made a 14,500-ton marble bell tower in a little town called Pisa, P-I-S-A, in Italy. But they built it on swampland, on a marsh. Well, when you've got 14,500 tons, remember, a ton is 2,000 pounds, you've got this 13-story building of solid marble, and you're building it on a swamp, on marsh. If you're not understanding two-dimensional, three-dimensional, they built the first three floors, and guess what happened? It starts to lean. The Leaning Tower of Pisa. As only an Italian would do, they kept building it. The thing is tilting, and they keep building it. God bless them. And it stays that way for 1,000 years. Here's the problem. If it tilts more than 5.4 degrees, it falls over. And in 1990, it got to 5.5 degrees of a lean. It's going to, after 1,000 years, it's going to fall down. How did they fix this? It's the same principle. If you look at your foot, maybe you've developed a bunion. A bunion is the Leaning Tower of Pisa, clapper vision, in your foot. That metatarsal bone, that first metatarsal, the big toe bone, that metatarsal bone in the mid portion of your foot is leaning like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Now, you can do all kinds of cockamamie operations at the ball of your foot, at the head of the metatarsal, but if that lean is significant, you're not going to be able to operate and cut out enough bone to straighten it. So how do you fix massively leaning bunions? Genius. You go to the other end of the bone, closer to where the midfoot is, and you actually take a wedge of the bone out, and you can steer the toe to be straight again. That's exactly what they did to fix the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Mussolini pumped concrete. They did all kinds of things to try to stop the leaning from being catastrophic, and they made it worse. Because you can only do so much with cables and pulling on it, schlepping on it. The genius engineer came along who, like Dr. Mink, who, like Pete Dye, could think from a two-dimensional drawing how to fix the three-dimensional problem. This one engineer said, I got an idea. Why don't we remove some of the dirt at the bottom of the leaning where the marsh is, take some of the dirt out as a wedge of dirt underneath the building. Whoop, straighten it right out. And now it's the direction it's been in from 1,000 years ago. It's fascinating. Two-dimensional thinking on three-dimensional structures. That's what we're going to get into today. And clapper vision, I want to talk about Tua Tagovailoa's hip and why I believe they better take him in the first round because he's going to be as good as new as a quarterback. And Anthony Davis, he's dealing with pain. The pain's subsiding. Playing the Houston Rockets today at 5 o'clock. We'd all love to see Anthony Davis return, particularly after losing to Orlando. We need him back in the lineup. All right, let's get into today's show. I'm so excited. Pete Dye, a real gift he has of seeing a golf course and the rocks and the boulders and the bunkers and the mountains. But he all starts from a two-dimensional drawing. Listen.
When former PGA Tour Commissioner Dean Beaman enlisted Pete Dye to design TPC Sawgrass's stadium course, the World Golf Hall of Fame architect went to work on a dinner placemat. That's right, the future home of the Players' Championship originally took shape with a sketch. With blueprint in hand, Dye built his masterpiece. Today, the stadium course stands as one of the world's premier venues. And it all began with the stroke of a pencil.
Pencil. Make the drawing, the visual in your head. But you gotta have the gift to make that two-dimensional drawing a three-dimensional structure.
I love building a golf course. You got to be crazy or something, but I love doing it.
95-year-old guy talking like that. He loves what he does. That's all you want in life. Pasión, as Kobe Bryant calls it. Passion for what you do.
Where 16 and Green is located, and 17 Green, there was a big pocket of sand, and it went deep. So we just kept digging and digging it out, digging it out, digging it out. All of a sudden, this big chasm was out there, and there was no place for the green. The green was gone. My bride came by. Al said to me, well, why don't you just put an island green out there?
Pete Dye will go for a swim today.
That's class with Pete Dye.
How do you like that? That to have the security in your gift to say, hey, don't give me the credit. My wife actually came up with the idea. You got to love the guy for being able to. Not many people would do that. No, me. It's all about me. Nope, Pete Dye said. Alice had the idea.
I'm not an architect. See, an architect, you have to have a degree in something. I couldn't finish grade school, high school, or college. You try to get as much variety as possible. And the man upstairs gave you a great piece of ground in the valley here. It rolled up and down and had the river going through it. So it had a lot of natural aspects to it. When we got over to the fifth hole and saw a tunnel, we could work it out. And when you can walk through a natural tunnel to go into the next tee, you can't find that any other place.
You could listen to his appreciation for the nature and for the fact that that napkin is a flat surface. But when you listen to Pete Dye talk, you can sense that he sees through the napkin. He sees the depth in what he's drawing.
And when a person plays the golf course, they remember those long views. And it has nothing to do with the playability of the golf course. It's the ambience around the golf course and inside the golf course that really makes it. I just was just here for a couple of years, like 12.
Taking no credit for it. It's like when Ed Bradley interviewed Bob Dylan. How did you come up with Blowing in the Wind as a song? All these great things I don't know, Bob Dylan said. It just came through me. He doesn't even know how to take credit for the genius that he has.
An artist is somebody that draws something. I've always just told people what I want and pray that they do it. And a lot of times when I tell them what to do, they do it a lot better than I ever thought and just leave it that way. So you never know. If you build a golf course, if it's then successful, that's the best thing. As long as in your profession, somebody still mentions your name and doesn't just put you in jail, you're okay.
And here we got to listen to Alice, his wife, also the brains behind that most famous island green.
The famous 17, dubbed Alcatraz, where Lee Trevino made his memorable hole-in-one in the 87 Skins game. This eye-catching island green, the design genius of Alice Dye.
Just look at it. Look at the water. Look at the natural grass around the rock.
Sounds like such a nice lady.
And that itty-bitty green in this great big lake and those gorgeous mountains behind it. You can't copy this. This is just perfect. If you're just a member playing and having fun, you're looking forward to this. But if you're a golf professional and trying to shoot a score, I think it's pretty scary.
Such a sweet lady ripping your heart out. Gotta love it. And in art, the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Most of the terrain in Pisa is essentially a former bog. A former swamp, and the subsoil in Pisa is extremely shifty and delicate, and it does not withstand heavy loads.
Heavy load? How about 14,500 tons?
The 57-meter-tall tower sits on supports that are only 3 meters deep and surrounded by soggy ground. Nowhere near strong or stable enough for a 14,500-ton pile of stone.
It's like building a tall tower on a sponge. It can only go so high before it's going to start leaning. In fact, it's a miracle it never collapsed.
Listen to this story.
Most of the attempts have failed, and those who most wanted to save the tower are really those who almost contributed to toppling it over. One of the most brutal interventions in the Tower was conducted by Mussolini, and that intervention was about as brutal as fascist politics. He had the idea of boring 361 holes in the foundation and pumping it with 90 tons of cement. Mussolini also owned the cement factory, Truman said. The tower began to sway slightly out of control, but it's always managed to stabilize itself.
This is when you don't grasp three-dimensional from a two-dimensional drawing. You get the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Now, lots of ancient buildings, they do lean, but the Leaning Tower of Pisa just looks like it's defying the law of physics. And that's all to do with its center of mass, which is just about here.
Experts calculate the tower's center of mass is around the fourth floor. As long as this sits above the base of the building, it will stand. But if it moves outside of that area, you have a disaster.
If it goes more than 5.4 degrees, it's going to fall.
Calculations show that when the tower was at a lean of about 5.44 degrees, it should have collapsed. Now, by 1990, it was already at 5.5. It should have gone down. No one knows why it didn't collapse.
Wow.
There are other dangers as well, one of which is the incredible amount of stress which is produced on certain areas of the tower due to the weight of the tower.
The tilt strains the walls, which can be devastating to a structure built from solid stone. But while these look solid, the walls are filled with a random mix of building materials, making them less sturdy.
There has been a great concern that the tower would rather burst and implode rather than topple over.
Not only could the tower have fallen, it could have exploded at any point. It defies belief that it's still standing.
Basically, the bell tower, Jerry Mink, is like a bone. The cortical bone, the bone on the outside, is the wall. The hollow stairwell in the center is the bone marrow. The quality of the cortical bone on the outside is key, and how blood vessels go through, and osteoporosis, and people being set up for fractures, nutrient arteries entering the bone. This is very similar to what you do, which we're going to get into at 7:15. But finally,
most solutions tried to help support the structure, but this just put more pressure on the ground underneath, making the problem worse. Eventually, wily engineers let gravity help out.
They had to start basically digging, drilling through into the soil, and they started removing really slowly, slowly the sand and the bit of the clay. So they created like a hill of clay nearby here. And then the tower started leaning a little bit less. So it became to lean now, it leans as it used to lean 2 centuries ago.
Digging under the tower turns out to have been a brilliant idea. It reduced the lean by about 10%, which although that doesn't sound a lot, it brought the tower back from the brink.
It's a miracle, and only the Italians would have a name for that.
In a way, the fact that the Tower of Pisa is located in the Campo dei Miracoli, or the Field of Miracles, strikes me as perfectly apt, because the tower should have toppled, in fact, centuries ago, and it hasn't. It goes on standing and will for 300 more years at least, and that, in a way, is a miracle.
The radiology world, looking at bones, looking at their alignment, looking at bunions, how they lean, creating a golf course two-dimensionally from a napkin, and visualizing the lake, the boulders, the mountains. It's a gift. And in medicine, a radiologist has to have that gift. And we'll get into it with my guest, the great Dr. Jerry Mink, coming up next here on the Weekend Warrior Show on ESPN LA 710. Steve Paulette, you're amazing. You found a song with the word x-rays in them. Fantastic. Oh, I love it. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Right now, I want to talk to my guest, the great Dr. Jerry Mink. His gift is to see x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, and tell me, the surgeon, what I'm really looking at three-dimensionally. And it's a gift. Jerry, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's learn who you are. You're such a celebrity in my eye. Where did you grow up? What did your dad do for a living? And how did going to medical school, becoming a radiologist, happen in your life?
Well, I grew up in Chicago, and my dad was an immigrant. And
what did he do for a living?
He owned a liquor store on the tough south side of Chicago.
Did he ever get held up at gunpoint?
He didn't get held up, but the police used to come in and ask if he needed any protection. And he would slide a $20 bill across the counter, and he didn't have any problems after
wow.
that. That was a routine at that time in Chicago. That's in the 40s and 50s.
Wow. And, of course, they took liquor as well, in addition to the $20.
Whatever they wanted, pretty much. I mean, wow. that's the way it worked out there. It was a tough neighborhood, and he didn't make a lot of money. And
How did medicine come into your life that you wanted to be a doctor?
Honestly, I had a very good friend named John. And his parents were immigrants as well, and they were both doctors in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they escaped from the Holocaust and came to this country and had a son named John. And since they were both doctors, he was destined to become a doctor. And I became friends with him and sounded like a good gig.
And how about radiology? Okay, you could study pediatrics, you can study surgery, cardiology. Who was the guy? What was the aha moment where you said, no, this is something that I really enjoy?
Well, actually, I wanted to be a surgeon.
Really?
And I was well into it and went out to San Francisco to do a surgery sub-internship.
Mm-hmm.
And the first night I was on call, we had an all-night surgery. And I walked out in the morning and I said, I can't do this. And I had to do something. I was in San Francisco. I was going to medical school in Chicago. I was in San Francisco. And I said, what could I do that would leave me a lot of free time to fool around here in San Francisco? And I said, oh, radiology. And that's truly how I got into it. At that time, there was no such thing as CAT scans, MRIs,
wow.
ultrasound. They didn't exist. It was
wow.
just plain x-rays and barium enemas and actually, mammography really didn't exist.
Wow. You were there for the beginning of MRIs.
Yes.
Take us back in time. This non-radiation using a magnet, almost a 360-degree look at the body, but for the first time, you can see the soft tissues, the muscle, the ligaments, the tendons swelling in those structures. What was it like when MRI first came into your life?
It was exciting and quite frightening. I think it was 1986. I was working at Cedars at the time, and we got our first MRI magnet. And there were a group of us who were very interested in it. But we realized we didn't know much about it because we were seeing structures we could never see before.
Hmm.
And so we used to scan each other.
Wow.
And Thursday morning was my morning, and I'd lay on the table. And I just get scanned for a few hours while everybody else, that's the muscle, oh, that's the nerve, and we just kind of learned on the fly a bit. I mean, we knew a lot, but we couldn't comprehend the amount of information that was coming out of the MRI, and we had to learn from the get-go. There were no books, there were no anything.
Hmm. In my 31 years in practice as an orthopedic surgeon, I have a routine. I do a very basic neurologic exam. Whether you come to me because it's your knee or your hip or whatever it is, I'm still going to do what I learned way back when, a neurologic exam. And over the years, I remember seeing a guy who flew out from Montana to see me. He needed his knee replaced. And in my exam, I just noticed that the side I was going to operate on was slightly weaker when I asked him to lift his foot up, even though I'm going to work on his knee. And I just couldn't get it out of my head. He just was a slight difference. And I made him, and he flew in to have surgery like in a couple of days. I said, you know what? You're going to go to David Campion. Remember him? He was a neurologist. You need to have a nerve test because something's not quite right. Nerve test comes back. Evidence of post-polio syndrome. So I look at the guy. He was a sheriff. I said, don't you think you would have told me that you had polio as a kid? That would be significant. I'm about to take care of your knee. He goes, I didn't have polio as a kid. I go, well, here's what the neurologist is saying your nerves are like, because I found this one thing in examining you. And he said, I didn't. Well, anyway, I worked it up. He had a very mild case of it. And he came back to see me. And he goes, you know, Dr. Clapper, I grew up, I'm from Montana now, but I grew up in upstate New York. And when I was a kid, all the kids in the neighborhood got polio. My mother used to always say to me, you know, you're the luckiest little boy there is because they all got polio. You didn't. He said, I must have got it, but not a severe case like they did, subtly, and it never affected me, but I was exposed to it, and I got it to a extent that I didn't get it full blown, but later in life, I have post-polio syndrome. Tell me, Jerry Mink, radiologist, in this beautiful career of yours, a few of the incidental things. People are coming to you because they tore their meniscus. People are coming because they have a herniated disc or their shoulder hurts with bursitis. You now do a study, and lo and behold, you find cancer.
It does happen sometimes that and it's usually the best kind to find when it's incidental before it's symptomatic. A Hollywood personality had a bad cough, and it went on and on. And he came in for a chest CT scan. And as part of the chest CT scan, we normally scan into the upper abdomen. Sure enough, there was a kidney tumor.
Wow.
And turned out to be cancer, but it was small, and it was taken out, and he had no problem after that. Mm. And another guy who still sends me notes every anniversary, he had an MRI of his hip because he had a bad hip. I think he wound up with a hip replacement. But we get to look in the pelvis, and sure enough, he had a aggressive, although not really malignant, vascular tumor in his pelvis. And he was told by someone he would have died. I don't know about that, but it certainly would have been a problem for him later in life. And every year on the anniversary of that MRI, he sends me a note and says, thank you for giving me another year.
Wow.
And it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens enough.
You know, MRIs are problematic for claustrophobia. Why do they have to make so much noise? So I want to continue the conversation. We'll pay some bills. We'll take a break, Steve Paulette. And when we come back, the great Dr. Jerry Mink, a man who can see things two-dimensionally but reconstruct the anatomy of our bodies three-dimensionally better than nobody that I've ever seen before. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. And don't worry, the clinic will be open. We'll be doing some clapper vision. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Only now the rain is gone. Jimmy Cliff. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the quiet clowns that pack me by. We are crying. Jimmy Cliff, what a great song. Thank you, Steve Paulette. I remember taking an x-ray of a patient in my office, both their knees, side by side. And I said to my radiologist, my x-ray tech, this right leg, the x-ray looks like it's in focus. This left leg standing right next to the right leg on the x-ray, you can see both on the single film, it looks like it's out of focus. How'd you do that? There's something the matter. I don't know, Dr. Clapper. I had the patient stand there. I just took the x-ray. It bothered me. Patient had lymphoma in the bone. That's how I could see it, because it looked out of focus. Story after story of being in the trenches like you've been, Dr. Jerry Mink. The things you've seen, the things I see. It's so exciting to be able to get up and go to work. The part about you that I love the most, Jerry Mink, is that the name of your office, it's kind of, I just told you off air, I had Craig from Craig's Restaurant. I'm so proud of him because he's been a guest on the show, and I love his restaurant, and I love him. For 30 years, worked as a maitre d', thinking he was going to be in charge of that restaurant. And now he's got to open his own restaurant. And I said to him, why'd you call it Craig's? He said, because that's who I am. And it's the hottest place to go after the Academy Awards. You want to go to Craig's. Mink Radiology. You want to go see Dr. Clapper? That's the name on the door. It ain't the hip and knee and shoulder center or whatever. It's my name. To have the cojones to put your name on the building. I'm going to Mink. That's where I'm going to. That's what people say. Teach us a little bit about MRIs. Why do they have to be so claustrophobic? And what's up with the banging and the banging and the banging?
Well, there's no getting away away from it, that the noise is unfortunately part of the deal. Now,
James Bond has a silencer on his pistol. You know, you can't get a silencer?
The manufacturers are mitigating it, and every patient must wear a headset.
This is a silencer.
Yeah, I got it. That every patient must wear a headset, and more noise-canceling headphones are reducing the impact of that noise on the patient.
Got it.
They have to wear a headset, but actually the noise is so loud that you could actually damage your hearing if you were just sitting there for
and
a
the
while.
Claustrophobia?
Claustrophobia is a tough question. That the open scanners, the old open scanners, did not produce images of very high quality. And so the good scanners are a ring-like affair, a tunnel-like affair. Now, the tunnels are shorter than they used to be, and the ring is bigger than they used to be. We have certain glasses that change the direction of the patient's vision, so they're not looking at the inside of the ring. They can actually...
Virtual reality glasses. You should
basically
have those.
Basically, that's what it is. It's interesting that some patients don't like those glasses shoved on their face, the claustrophobic patients.
Got it.
But we can show we have headsets for music, and we actually have goggles that you can watch a movie.
Everyone knows if you have a pacemaker, you can't have an MRI. I was taught, tell me if I'm wrong, that if you were a welder as a career, tiny shards of metal from being a welder all your life could be in your near your eye unknowingly. And if you got an MRI, you could rip your lens apart. So being a welder as a profession was a contraindication to having an MRI. Is that still true? And what's up? People feel if you've got metal in your body as a knee replacement, hip replacement, you can't have an MRI. Clearly, that's not true.
No. Regarding the welder, the fact that you were a welder is not the problem. Many welders get things in their eye, and they go to a doctor, and they have it removed. If a patient has a history of either an eye injury or a profession as a welder, we take an X-ray first before the MR. And if there's no metal in their eye, we go ahead and do the MR completely safely.
Good to know.
So it's not just that you were a welder. Regarding other metals in your body, all the modern orthopedic appliances are safe in an MRI. They may produce a little bit of an artifact. Like if you have a hip replacement right at your hip, the image is going to be a little distorted. But as far as safety goes, there's no problem with orthopedic procedures.
I'm going to take advantage of you being in with me right now. Maybe we'll take a call. Let's go to Peter in Burbank. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Doc, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure, Peter. What do you do for a living?
I work for a freight company called FedEx.
Really? Fantastic. Yeah. What, like two guys in a garage dream this whole thing up, and then look what happened. The world got changed.
Exactly. I'm on the same-day city side. We do same-day city deliveries.
How many seconds does the driver have, according to the big bosses, to deliver the package?
Oh.
41 seconds?
No, we're into the minute range
now. Thank God. I love that. You know, you got rarefied air right now because you got Dr. Jerry Mink, 40 years plus being a radiologist, and Dr. Clapper, 31. You got 70 years of medicine really at your disposal right now, which is really quite a treat. How can I help you?
Well, I'm a 71-year-old, still working, and I hurt my shoulder, so I'm on a workman's comp situation.
Okay.
And I had an MRI, and I just was interested in getting a Clapper vision.
Yeah, well, I got Dr. Mink here as well. So do you have the report in front of you?
I sure do.
All right, go to the impression and go slowly so we can both help you. Go ahead.
Okay, you got to bear with me because I'll probably butcher the terminology.
Well, listen, I just said go ahead, and in the English language, there is no word G-A-H-E-A-D. So go ahead.
Okay. There are tendinopathy changes of superus.
Okay, cool. So stop right there. Tendo means the tendon. Pathy means pathology. So it means it ain't right. Something's not right. It's father time. At Cedars, we call it altacocaritis.
Basically, you were
going to
say that.
Yeah, pretty good, Peter from Burbank. Are you Jewish? No one named Peter's Jewish. You're not Jewish. You just know lots of Jewish people.
On my mother's side, I'm a Cohen, so I guess I am Jewish.
Get out of here. Oy, that is such a problem. If a Cohen marries a non-Jewish person, what a nightmare must have been for your grandparents.
You got that right.
Oh, my God. That's a nightmare. Holy smokes. A Cohen marrying some Gentile. That's amazing. Peter, so no wonder you're working for FedEx. Anyway, Peter, okay. Tendinopathy. So that means that something's not, it's drying out. It's desiccating. Dr. Mink, what does the tendon look like as it gets older? It's a black and white film, but shades of gray. What is it that that they're seeing for the term tendinopathy to be used for his rotator cuff?
Almost all the tendons in the body are black, quite black in the normal situation. Mm-hmm. As we get older, there's wear and tear, there's drying out, there's some structural changes in the tendon, and it becomes a shade of gray. It can be slightly gray or more significantly gray, but it goes from black to gray. And it's a sign of age, frankly.
My best clapper vision, Peter, is, and you're going to have to work with me on this one, but it's the old days, and you're 71, so you remember when you bought a refrigerator and you had a freezer, right? The fridge freezer. In the old days, you had an ice cube tray. Remember this? You went to the sink, you took the ice cube, you filled it with water. There's no R in that word, by the way. It's W-A-T-A-H. You filled it with water, and you put it in the freezer. It was in the sink a minute ago as liquid. You leave it in the freezer. Oh, you got to get something else 20 minutes later. You look at your ice cube tray. It ain't ice yet. It's slush. It's going through this stage of liquid to slush. And if you wait another half an hour, it's a good hour. Thank you. Now it's a solid. It became ice. The same material, depending on the temperature, changed from liquid to something in the middle to a solid. For want of a better term, a clapper vision of aging tendons on an MRI is we start out literally as water, juicy, hydrated, delicious. You know, if you got a grandson or granddaughter, you know what delicious is. They're just so juicy because their skin, and they have punem, you know, their cheeks. They're like just terrific. Then you become Grandpa Walton. Trust me, I don't want to pinch his cheeks because they're not like a baby's cheeks. That's the ice. That's the solid. And you're closer to the solid ice at 71 with your tendon. You're not slush. You're 40, 50, it looks like slush. That's the changes, the black, white, the shades of gray. That's what tendinopathy means. But it already sounds like it's good news for you, Peter, because I don't hear them saying you have a full thickness tear. So read the next sentence.
Okay, then it's the changes of the supraspinatus and the subscapular tendon with adjacent mild reactive changes of the greater and lesser tuberositis.
Tuberosities, right. So here's another clapper vision for you. You've got a boat. It's tied to the dock. It has a rope. The tendon is the rope that ties the boat to keep it from, as the tides go up and down, from drifting away from the dock. You need a rope. But you got to tie the rope to something on the dock that's called a cleat. It's this metal device bolted into the wooden dock. The tendon is the rope. The cleat is the tuberosity. And you will see fraying of the metal cleat onto the wooden dock. That's changes that are in the tendon's insertion to the bone itself. We can see it. It's aging, but at least it's still attached. How's that, Dr. Mink?
Perfect. I mean, so far what you said is pretty typical report for a 71-year-old.
Right. So far, so good. Go ahead.
Okay. Then there is no evidence of a full-thickness rotator cuff tear, which is good because I wouldn't be able to pitch for the Dodgers.
Peter, here's the best thing. Do not let anybody give you a cortisone shot, stem cells, PRP. Don't put any needles in your shoulder. Be holistic, please. Okay. It's a big business in medicine to stick things into you. And I'm a surgeon telling you this. This is not something you need surgery. First, next step for Peter from Burbank is find yourself a good physical therapist. My favorite, he's in Burbank. Coincidentally, it's called Warrior Physical Therapy. Go seek him out. His name is Martin. He's the best there is. It's not that far from Burbank. I'm from New York. You know, you get on the freeway, you just keep going. That's what you'll do. Burbank and Pasadena, it's the same thing. So you need to go see him in Pasadena. Martin, he will help your shoulder. You do not need surgery. If, God forbid, you do a few months with Martin doing physical therapy and it still hurts, then I do hundreds of these every year to clean up the bone spur, clean up the schmutz that's inside there. But you don't have to put stitches in that tendon. You go home the same day, you sling, you take it off, you're moving your arm right away. I will get you to have a shoulder that doesn't hurt, but you want to avoid surgery first. Best way to do that for you, some physical therapy, try that first. Okay, Peter?
Right. I'm already set up for some physical therapy.
Good.
And I'll try that. And
good.
Thank you very much, Dr. Clapper. And I will pass it forward. I'll do something good for somebody else today, which is out of my character.
Well, good. That means you're a good member of the Weekend Warrior Nation. I appreciate that. And if the therapy you're going to doesn't hit a home run, then you should go see Martin in Pasadena at Warrior Physical Therapy, because that guy's got special skills, just like Dr. Mink does. And thanks so much for checking in with us. All right, Warriors, we'll take a break. We'll come back. I had the best orange I've ever had in my life. It came from Gelson's. I don't know if they got an orchard in the back there someplace, but let me tell you the name of this kind of orange. Jessica Siegel actually made this happen from Gelson's. You won't believe how delicious an orange can be. I know navel orange, all the rest. Wait till I tell you the brand, the kind of orange you have to ask. And they're in the store right now. Blew my mind. Coming up next, I'll tell you what it is. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Dr. Bones, love that. I almost cannot wait till the top of the hour at 8 o'clock. And I'm going to do the clinic, so stay on the lines. The lines are lit up. But I just love this story of two-dimensional going three-dimensional. I only have a few minutes before the first hour's out, so I need to let you know about this orange. It's called a sumo. Who even knows? I know what a sumo wrestler is. You know why I know what a sumo wrestler is? Because when my mother was still alive, I came home from work, had my scrubs on, I was in the operating room all day, Mr. Big Shot that I am. My mother would not let me be a big shot. So I came home. She was staying with us, visiting from Florida, because there's a law in New York when you turn 65, you have to move to Florida. But there she was in my house. My dad wasn't there at the time. I come home, long day. And I can't wait. It must have been the summer. I don't know. I just took my shirt off in front of my mother, my top of my scrubs. And my big fat belly is just hanging out there. As only my mother could say to me, she goes, "Oh, Robbie, since when did you become a sumo wrestler?" It made me want to put my shirt right back on. She didn't say, "Oh my God, you're fat." She didn't say any of that. She said, "Since when did you become a sumo wrestler?" Man, she could let me have it. But anyway, the name of this orange, as we say in New York, orange, A-H, range. That's what it is. It's an orange. It's the most delicious juice. It's like a carton of orange juice inside the rind. And you know what I love about this sumo orange from Gelson's? That when you peel it, it's not like you got to pick at the peel a little bit to get it, and then you take pieces of the actual flesh of the orange with it. That skin is thick. Boom, boom, boom. You get the whole thing done. You could literally, I'm not saying you should do this, but you could drive with your left hand and peel the orange with your right hand, which I actually did. So I was eating pieces of an orange with one hand. That's a skill set. Good thing I didn't kill anybody in the interim. Forget about texting. They should have a whole campaign. Don't peel an orange while you're driving. But I did. But a sumo, you can do this. And they're heavy. You feel them. The weight is the liquid, is the orange. And you know what an orange juice really is? Liquid sunshine. That's the sun. That's why they're the same color. Somehow this tree managed to capture the orangeness of the sun into the juice of the flesh of the orange. And you talk about sweet. You don't have to put any sugar on it. Anyway, that's my food for this week, is the sumo orange. Coming up next, I'll take your calls. The number's 877-710-ESPN, but I got to tell some stories. And I also want to keep talking to the great Dr. Jerry Mink. In fact, what I may do is I'm going to have him listen to some of these sound bites about other people who do what he does, see things 2D and understand them 3D. Curious what he thinks about it. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710.